too bad people weren't born with handles. Oh, you realize how easy it would be if they had handles. You just grab the handles and say, get over there. As it is, it's kind of hard to grab them. They're slippery. Like, have you ever seen this guy? One of my old friends. He's not my old friend. He hates me, actually. And I can't stand him either. But he's like a landmark. It's this guy who sits there behind that machine in that store down the street where they sell the Donald Duck hats and the big bop caps that are about 14 feet across and the little derbies that say Corky on them. I just thought of, can you just see John Foster Dulles getting off a big plane, a DC-7? It's got a big sign on the side that says U.S. Constitution number 3. It's got flags all over it, and all the newsreels are there, and John Daly is there, and Ed Murrow is there, all the important guys at the H.V. Kaltenborn, H.G. Grubbage, they're all there, see? Ed Sullivan's on hand, everybody, all the massive thinkers of our time. And the door opens, and out comes Foster, John Foster Dulles, and he's got this red derby on, right on the top of his head, and it says Johnny on it. It says, hi, fellas! Oh, boy! I was in New York! I wonder how John Daly would handle that one. He's a pretty good man at throwing it to first, but he can't go to his left well. That's the trouble with Daly. And he gets blinded in the sun when they hit pop flies to him. Outside of that, he's pretty good. He's not much of a stick man, though. Well, he never could hit a curveball, you know. Speaking of curveballs, I feel like a live, living curveball myself, thrown by a left-hander who has trouble with his right eye and difficulty with his control. I don't know what has possessed me. Do you know that I'm going around town these days sitting on a mechanical contrivance with a motor under my fanny? I can't understand it. What's happened to me? I'm beginning to feel that I am symbolic of all 20th century men. Motorized. I've got this Vespa scooter. And I go around town and they tell me that the next model is going to have this JATO on it. It's great. Really. You ought to see me go. You ought to see me bank on the curves. I've got this solid gold crash helmet that says Herald on the back. I don't know why they put Herald on the back. And has a coat of arms on the front. Has two silver wings that stick up in the air. I look magnificent in my suede cummerbund. That's brushed suede. And they see me go. I was out at this rally today in a supermarket center in Long Island. These guys were riding up and down over. All of a sudden I had this feeling I was in the middle of a Salvador Dali painting. And I was the watch that was melting and dripping down over the side of a grand piano with six human legs. Me. I kept saying, what am I doing? What's happening to me? What's happening? I'm exploding. Which, by the way, is what most of us ask ourselves at least three times a week. What's happening to me? How did this come about? But it's fun, you know? But then, on the other hand, I suppose being a skyrocket is fun, too, for 30 seconds. Speaking of fun, you know, what is... But then, you see, it's so problematical here, approaching fun head-on. Fun in all of its forms, ramifications. Now, what I think is fun might not be your idea of fun. Like, for example, I just like to look at this guy sitting behind his sewing machine writing Corky on the bills of pink derbies. I think it's great. He has this little doll that goes up and down on the top of the spindle. Have you seen it? It's a little doll. If you look closely at that doll, brother, it'll cloud your glasses over. It's not a doll at all. Look at it. Anyway, this thing goes up and down. He's got a little thing in his mouth. He goes, have you heard him do that? They've been playing that same record in there for the last 5,000 years. It was a Neolithic rumba. Paleolithic Mambo. And this thing is a very rare recording. You know, I have a feeling that that place is still going to be there when everything else has disappeared. They'll still be selling funny hats. It's probably more symbolic than Sputnik. Is there anyone out there who's ever bought one of those hats that looked like the top of Donald Duck? No. Donald Duck with the big bill sticking out in front and the two eyes on the top? No, that's a Mickey Mouse hat. No, I wear that Mickey Mouse hat all the time. Nothing wrong with that. No, I'm talking about the Donald Duck hat with a big bill. All right. Okay, let's buckle down to business here. Do you hear the sound of the rattling dirks, and razors, and knives? And I'm buckling down to business here. First of all, I'm going to peddle Ballantine Ale. Just remember one thing. Ballantine's Ale. Meaty dush, you know. Ballantine's Ale really does. Sure it does. I'm not kidding you. Take me at my word this time. You'd be surprised. You'd be amazed what it'll do to your social life. So try about 4 jugs of Ballantine's Ale tonight. Be amazed. Really. Ballantine's Ale. Nut brown. Golden. It's the only ale that glows in the darkness. And incidentally, you too, you know, can. Glow in the darkness, I'm talking about, of course. Ballantine's Ale. Ale. Schmale. Double bale. What was that then? Oh, no, that's another thing. I'm just all of a sudden Shakespearean phrase about Bane. Is there anybody who knows anything about Shakespeare? Bane? No, it has nothing to do with ale. Excuse me, madam. You have a big foot. It's a shapely foot, though. It's well, certainly, it's a beautiful foot. Don't think for a minute that just because it's big, it's not beautiful. Some of the biggest things in the world are some of the most beautiful things, madam. That's right. Not for a moment. I'm just admiring it. It's okay. Ballantine's Ale. Marlboro cigarettes. Do you know that there's a guy in Staten Island that's built a life-size model of the George Washington Bridge out of Marlboro cigarettes? It's a beautiful thing. The popular mechanics people are covering it in the December issue. You'll see pictures of it. He's a listener, incidentally. Or he was. Terrible thing that happened to him. But Marlboro cigarettes, they have that flip-top box. It's very handy, that box. All kinds of things. Marlboro cigarettes. Hey, have you seen that little red tab when you open up the Marlboro cigarettes? When you zip it open, you know, it's got this little thing that says tear here, and you zip it around and the cellophane comes off, and then you open the box, and there's a kind of silver piece of tinfoil-like that you just take off, you lift it off, you throw that away. There is no magic number inside that. Hey, why don't you start a rumor? Let's all start a rumor that there's a magic number that's going to be printed on one Marlboro cigarette that's good for $8 million if you get it. Well, that's a way to get those cigarettes moving, isn't it? How about it, huh? Do you want to start that rumor? Now, don't say that I said it. I didn't say it. You're saying. See, you buy the cigarette and you say, right away, you look at all, here's the way you do it, see? You're sitting at the table with another guy, and you take out, all of a sudden, you just open your new box of Marlboro, see, and you dump all the cigarettes out. And this is very unusual. So you dump them out, you look at them, and you don't say anything. The guy says, what's this jazz? See, I'm looking for the magic number. And don't say anymore. See, and you start putting them back, and you smoke one. He doesn't want to fall. You know, he doesn't want to admit that he's not in, see? And then he's sitting there, and you're eating the salad. Pretty soon he says, I look for the magic number myself. Of course, he's not. He doesn't know what he's talking about. See, he's just feeling around. Nobody wants to admit they don't know anything now, you know. He says, Now, George, you sit there. You don't say anymore. He says, it sure is magic, that number. Boy, you know, I'd love to find it. Didn't say anything. Then you wait a while. Just play it cool, see? After the meal, then. He doesn't know what to say, see? He's still trying to figure this out. He hasn't even enjoyed his meal now. You take out another cigarette, and then he takes out a package of brand C, which shows, of course, automatic from his phone. And, You say, magic number? Then suddenly he colors. He realizes that he slipped. He says, okay, so I don't know about the magic number. What is it? He says, just the magic number. Marlboro's. Don't you know about it? No. What is it? You say, it's this $8 million contest. It's what? You just say, $8 million, you know. It's nothing. I never win anything. And then you just don't say any more. And you go on talking about the world and everything, and you go. This guy will be down in 5 minutes buying 25 cartons of Marlboros. He'll spend the whole night dumping Marlboros out on the living room floor. Magic number. Somebody to sell these old cigarettes, boy. Marlboro, the cigarette of the magic number. Say that to yourself. Yes, and while all the world is looking for magic numbers, we'll be down knocking down the old orange drink at Needix, slopping it up. Hot dog after. You know, it's a funny thing. This is a very peculiar commercial, and I don't intend to make it a commercial, really, because it isn't really. But you know that I at one time, in one stage of my career, in my 15th year, which is a year that I remember only dimly, I got this monkey on my back. It wasn't really a monkey, it was a giant hot dog. I got on this hot dog kick, and I couldn't stop. It's a funny thing. Have you ever had those things happen to you? When you can't stop a certain thing? Like one time I went through a hamburger phase. But I remember when I used to go to the dime store. It was a dime store in our town. And it had all this kind of maroon woodwork, you know, that they always have in dime stores. It looks like it's 8,000 years old and has been lacquered over 40 times. And there's a dime store smell in the air, like a freshly painted tin, the way dime store smells, with a kind of a peculiar old overlaying odor. There's all kinds of odors in different layers. One of the odors is of those crummy-looking candies that look like peanuts. They're in the shape of peanuts, and they taste like imitation banana oil. You know those funny things, and they're dusted over with that talcum powder? And you smell that as soon as you walk in. And this perfume, there was a perfume called Radio Girl they used to sell in the dime store when I went there. It had a big, big sign that says, you can have all the allure and all the glamour of a radio star. Radio Girl perfume. It was like fly talks. And you could smell it. And that's the way the dime store smelled, see? And right inside the door of this dime store, they had this little booth where they sold hot dogs. And they weren't a patch on the Needix hot dogs. But one Saturday, I remember distinctly, one Saturday I went into this dime store, and I had a buck, which I had earned by selling this paper that was interested only in vivisectionism, nothing else. The world was blowing up. And so, it was a funny paper. And I used to, you know, and so I used to go into the dime store, and I'd shop around. One day, you know how you get that feeling, I'm going to do it. The heck with it all. You ever had that feeling? I went up to this counter, and I put this buck down, and I started to eat hot dogs and drink this orange drink. I ate hot dogs. Orange drink was 5 cents in those days. I remember I shot the whole buck. And after the first 4 hot dogs, I began to tilt sideways. By the time I'd hit the 6th hot dog, I was at a 45-degree angle. And after the 7th hot dog, I was just beginning to look sideways up from the, you know, from the surface of the stools. And by the time I knocked down the 8th one, I was at a perfect 90-degree angle. I bent like an inverted L. It was great. I got all hot dogged up. I went reeling out, singing those bawdy barracks ballads that I'd learned in the Boy Scouts. I'll never forget those bawdy barracks ballads. Used to sit around the old campfire. Mademoiselle from... That wasn't the one. We used to sing... Scouting friendship strong and deep till we meet again. I remember I just got that out of my mouth and I toppled into the curb. Fell flat on my face. This little old lady says, "There's another one of them crummy Boy Scouts. Look at him." That was awful. So, friends and neighbors, drop by tomorrow and have a hot dog for old Shep at Needick's. Okay? Remember the day of my dishonor. The day that I began to unravel. Orange drink, hot dogs. You know they don't even give me a pass to Needick's? I should have a gold lifetime pass to Needick's. There'd at least be that to cling to. You know? When all of this has disappeared, the radio station has sunken into the ground and been covered up by mushrooms and toadstools and frogs. When television is just a memory. When there's nothing but green fields, at least I'd have that gold lifetime pass. I could see me a gentle, kindly old Charles Coburn type. Or Cuddles, what was his name? Old Charlie. I could see me. Big jowls hanging, going down for my daily hot dog and orange drink. It's Arrow's friendly old, Cuddles Zakal. Zakal? Old Cuddles Shepherd. Yeah. His eyes twinkling. He's living on his pension now. 3 hot dogs a day at Needick's. 2 orange drinks. He's allowed 1 hamburger for the evening meal. Friendly old cadet, he's been through it. And the neighbors, whispering, say, "Boy, I remember when he was great." Many years, nobody remembers it anymore except me. He was great. He's got this gold lifetime pass. Have a hot dog on old Chef tomorrow at Needick's. Raise the piccalilli jar high. And the weak cry of Excelsior. Do you know there isn't one guy that works in one Needick's weave his nose about this program? Not one! Ask your friendly Needick's hot dog salesman. Say Excelsior to me. Say, "We don't carry it." See what you get. This is true anonymity. True. see it. I'm beginning to, no, of course not. I'm not going to try to pretend I understand it, but I'm beginning to see it. Beginning to feel it, too. Is there anybody out there who would like to join my Whistler's band? I'm forming a 17-piece jazz Whistler band. I'm looking for two tenor men that can whistle tenor. I'm going to go out on the road, give Woody Herman some trouble. See, rising out of the folk, a shell, like a cloud of dust, and then eventually swirling higher and higher until, like a pox, we'll sweep over the entire nation. Speaking of poxes, I'll be back in just 5 minutes.
You know it's against the law to drop paper and rubbish on the streets and sidewalks. Always use the litter baskets. Take pride in your city. A cleaner New York is up to you. Stay tuned now for John T. Flynn and the news. This is WOR 710 and WOR FM New York.
Every week at this time, John T. Flynn is presented by America's Future, a nonprofit educational institution dedicated to upholding the principles of free enterprise and constitutional government. Now, speaking from New York, here is John T. Flynn.
Washington, as you have probably surmised, is in a state of prime jitters because of those Russian Sputniks. And well, it might be. As someone has pointed out, we have, for the first time in 90 years, a military man in the White House. And in a supreme military race, our White House military leadership seems to have been left at the post. Whether this is true or not, the White House seems to be in a state bordering on near panic. Following the launching of Sputnik 1, President Eisenhower had a hurry-up conference with Prime Minister Macmillan of Great Britain. It was announced that we were going to pool our resources, our scientific resources, with Great Britain. On top of that came the announcement that the President is going to Paris next month. He's going to another one of those summit meetings, this time with NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, where there's going to be more talk of pooling resources. In fact, the other day, a dispatch from London announced that our noble allies in Europe insist that they want a share in the United States control of our atomic stockpiles and the decision to use them in emergency. Of course, pooling our resources with Britain and others means handing over to them our atomic and guided missile secrets, after which they will decide when to use them and thus involve us in some more of their everlasting brawls. However, the President must get the permission of Congress to do this, because the Atomic Energy Act forbids the giving away of our secrets. And when Congress comes back, you are going to see quite a battle on this subject. Congress is likely to ask what happened in the past to secrets we shared with Britain. What about Dr. Alan Nunn May, the British scientist who went to jail for 10 years for giving atomic secrets to Russia? What about Dr. Klaus Fuchs, sent here by Britain to work in our atomic project, who then transmitted all his information to the Reds? What about Pontecorvo and MacLean and Burgess and others? Finally, as reported by the New York World Telegram, what about Dr. Peter Kapitsa, the designer of Sputniks, who is the big hero at Cambridge University these days? Cambridge University in England. Now, speaking for America's Future, here is R.K. Scott.
It is not unlawful to teach the violent overthrow of the United States government, provided the method by which it is to be overthrown is not included in the teaching. Shocking, you say. Indeed. but this is only one of at least 15 similar decisions handed down by our Supreme Court during the last 3 years. Who are the men responsible for making these decisions? How much farther will they go? Well, you'll find the answer to these questions in a new 24-page pamphlet about the Supreme Court. You must read Nine Men Against America, a step-by-step account of the men and events that have shocked and startled a nation. The price, 5 copies, $1. Single copy price, 25 cents. Send your dollar for the Supreme Court booklet to the John T. Flynn Program, Box 410, Grand Central Station, New York. 3 copies of this broadcast, right to the same address. John T. Flynn, Box 410, Grand Central Station, New York.
Give her the Benrus Embraceable. Benrus Embraceable, accurate watch and beautiful bracelet combined. Benrus Embraceable, 2 gifts in 1.
Please give to the WOR Children's Christmas Fund, Box 710, Times Square Station, New York. This is WOR, AM and FM, New York.
Feel it? Did you hear something there a moment? Not yet. I wait for my cue. That's it. Everybody, sit at attention now. Wait for my cue. Don't listen until I give you the cue. Hang there for a moment in limbo. You'd be surprised how it feels. It's great. It's a wonderful feeling. It's a kind of mental ambiotic. You know, your foot bob up and down. You are now in limbo, all of you. You are floating halfway between the surface and the bottom. You are now in perfect suspension. Listen carefully now, because when you're in limbo, hanging in suspension like that, a colloidal suspension is what we call it. I, by the way, think you'd better make a note of that, because it's liable to appear on the exam. Colloidal, that's two L's, colloidal. Spell it C-O-L-L-O-I-D, colloidal suspension. That's what you are now in. All right? Okay. All right. Now listen carefully. You know what I want? You know what I've always wanted to have? Almost more than anything, almost more than a stick with a pin in the end of it that I can go around and pick up Baby Ruth wrappers, which has been a deep-seated thing that I've always wanted since I was 8 years old. Once when I was out at Lincoln Park in Chicago, I saw this guy do this. It's a magnificent. You should have seen this guy. He was a left-hander. You very rarely see a left-handed pin stick user. It's very difficult left-handed. And this guy had this big bag slung over his left shoulder and hung down on his right hip, and he used his left hand, and he had a beautiful sidearm motion. He was pure poetry. I'll never forget this guy. I've seen this guy. I sat there one afternoon, the whole afternoon, and watched him. And you can tell. Can't you tell greatness? Really, you can tell. It's like the way Joe DiMaggio used to walk around in the outfield. You know? Nothing got past this guy. He walked like a tiger. Just casual and easy. He was right there in his, right in his environment. Well, that's the way this guy was. He had this little white cap with a black bill. And he walked sort of casual and easy, like a tiger in the jungle. And he carried this long stick with a pin on the end of it. I'll never forget that slow, easy, left-handed sidearm motion. Just like that. And another Baby Ruth wrapper was gone. I saw that guy pick up, you know, these little thin gum wrappers? I saw that guy pick up a gum wrapper at over 30 feet. Just a long, beautiful overhand motion he used to use in long shots. Just like that. Yes. began to grope my way along a dark, unevenly paved passage, which I had taken no more than two steps forward when the folly of my behavior crashed upon me like a revelation. If the woman who had disappeared somewhere ahead were indeed she whom we had known as Madame Ingemar, what a fool I was to thrust myself into this rat trap. For a man to experience such terrors in regard to a woman may seem feeble, but from bitter experience I knew something of the weapons of the commando Foul O.C. That I might be mistaken about the identity of the gold mask was remotely possible, but no more than remotely so. In a few fleeting seconds, I had reviewed the queer episode from the moment when I had seen that green-robed figure in Shepherd's Garden, and I realized with bleak certainty that her behavior had been directed to one end and to one end only. A trap had been baited, and I had fallen into it like the veriest fool. I pulled up sharply, stretching out my hands to learn if any obstruction lay ahead. In the heat of the chase, I had thrown precaution aside. I realized now, too late, that I was unarmed, alone. No one but the driver of the taxicab had the slightest idea where I'd gone. This same counsel came in the same moment that panic threatened. What else I could have done if the woman were not to escape unmasked was not clear. But to have sent a message to Petrie, to Smith, or to the chief before getting out seemed now a much more reasonable course. And a sinister feeling began to take me. Take me by the hand and lead me forward, forward into that dank, dark passage that stretched endlessly before me. And with an instant, I was in the room. I was in the throne room of the insidious Dr. Fu Manchu himself. A fiend from the various depths of purgatory. His vast intelligence pulsated and throbbed throughout the room. I could feel it. Oh, but my poor pen, I can't possibly convey to you the way it really was. The weaknesses of my pen hold me back at this moment. But suffice it to say that I felt this intelligence throbbing, throbbing, throbbing. His green eyes tilted slowly towards me. That parchment-like skin wrinkled into one of the most devilish, leering smiles that this face of the earth has ever felt, has ever seen. Dr. Fu Manchu looked through me, directly through me. Through me. Okay, now let's everybody just get a good grip on everything here now. Come on, good grip, good solid grip. No, I'll give you, yeah, just no more. A good solid grip now. Funny thing. You can go right on off. I've often, you ever read Don Quixote? And vibrate knowing and understanding that there were windmills out there. And sometimes they're not quite the way they look to be. It was like when I, you know, speaking of windmills, I remember a very peculiar feeling that I had one time when I'm driving outside of Amsterdam last spring in a kind of peculiar Dutch half mist, half darkness. Twilight in Holland is very strange. It's different from twilight here. It has a kind of closed-in feeling. There's a feeling always in the air that any minute now there's going to be a tremendous storm. But it isn't that way at all. There's no storm. It's just twilight, that's all. And I was driving outside of Amsterdam and going away from the city. And it was twilight, very, very, just on the edge of total darkness. And all of a sudden, this windmill loomed up off to the left in the flat swamp. And it was almost as if I had seen suddenly a complete and disembodied vision of some kind. It didn't look real at all. It looked like a kind of recreation of all the postcards, all the strange half dreams I'd ever had. And there it was. I'm like, no, don't. We don't use the singing commercial. Just take all of them. Don't put any of them up on the table. It's all right. We don't need any of them. Quit worrying about it. Just look at me for a while. I'm difficult enough. And there it was. It was a windmill. I looked out of the window. I said, it's a windmill. Can't be a windmill. It is a windmill. There it was. It was a windmill in the twilight. Half silhouetted. Wouldn't you like to see yourself in a silhouette? Looming tall, strangely slender, against the darkness of an Arabian night, with a million stars twinkling. You know what I've always wanted to have, more than anything else? That is next to this stick with the pin in it. I wanted to have a scroll. I have never been given a scroll of any kind. A thing that unrolls and has a seal at the bottom with a ribbon. It says, you're great. Lee, the undersigned. The amalgamated things of the world. Beta chapter. Sigma House have unanimously voted you magnificent. You are great. And we name you an honorary thing. So hold aloft the torch in your accustomed way. Signed this date, the year of our Lord, 1957. Whenever you say that, that means it's really official. A big golden seal on the bottom, and there in old English letters, an inch and a half high, Gene P. Shepherd. The P stands for Pittsburgh. Wouldn't that be great? I've never been given a scroll. Oh, sure, I had a scroll once from the Horlick Trailblazers. But that was nothing. That was a crummy outfit. I was sucked into that one. I had to drink all this Horlick malted milk, and I sent in the box top from the Horlick malted milk thing. Took me 6 weeks to talk my mother into getting that one. Sent it away, and they sent me back this scroll. It says, you're now a member of the Horlick Trailblazers. Then the show went off the air.
We haven't blazed a trail since. Not a single trail. Are there any old ex-Horlick trailblazers out there? Want to gather at meetings and set out and blaze a couple of trails? What were those things that we're supposed to do to trees? I remember you're supposed to chop some of the bark off or something. I remember that. Try that in Central Park once. Tell this cop, I'm blazing a trail, buddy. I'm a pioneer out here. This is trackless territory. We're on the very edge of the wilderness. It'll take me 6 weeks to get to a bottle of Valentine's Ale at this rate. Blazing trails and looking on the north side of things for moss. You know, there's a guy that stands on the corner of 46 and 6th Avenue that has moss growing on it. It's been there so long. Oddly enough, it's on his west side. I don't know what the significance is of that, but it's there. So, if you don't want any moss to grow on you, you better start lapping up the Ballantine's Ale. It's great for moss. Burns it right off. So, give it a try, you know? If all else has failed, fellow sufferer, if you've tried countless other potions for relief and haven't found that they work, if you've listened to all these other wild claims and nothing has happened, many of our satisfied users have written wonderful letters of recommendation. Mrs. M.F., for example, of Mobile, Alabama, writes, "Hot dog! Valentine's Ale, hot diggity dog!" And it kind of scribbles away down towards the bottom. You should see this letter. It's great. It's obvious that this pours right from the heart, you know? So, if you've tried everything else and nothing has worked, Valentine's Ale will do it. It's golden. It'll make you golden. At least you think you're golden, anyway. Which is just as important, I suppose. Because if you really were golden, it wouldn't be so good. Actually, you'd be in trouble all the time. People would be chipping away at you. Give me a souvenir, Charlie. They'd lop a finger off, you know. They want to carve your initials. Hey, does... just another thought. Excuse me, madam. No, I'm... Don't take it wrong, madam. You have a very lovely foot. I've said that before. Now I mean it. So get out of my hair, will you? You got great feet. Okay. Anyway, Valentine's Ale will do it. Not to mention round general tires. Why do I have to keep talking about round general tires? By the way, they're coming out with a new octagonal model for people who feel that their lives are sinking into a kind of dull cushion of nothingness. Want to get shaken up a little bit once in a while. You know, feel that surge of life. So ask for them at your friendly neighborhood general tire dealer. If you've been fighting flat tires all of your life, try general tires. They don't fight back. General tires, they're round, rich, and rubbery, and they contain that wonderful new secret ingredient. And you can easily be the first in your neighborhood to have this secret ingredient. Hello, you. Why don't you be the first in your neighborhood to admit total defeat? Be the very first. Just run out of the house and say, "I give up." And let them think. Be the first to do it. Be the first to try this wonderful new bomb. Speaking of bombs, I feel like hurling an invective tonight. All right, there will be an invective tonight between the hours of 11:15 and 12 o'clock. Get your radio on the windowsill now in readiness. I brought this flamethrower in specially for it. So get ready. That's an idea, can't you just... Some guys collect old pistols, other guys collect old sabers. Some guys collect stamps. Old Shep collects old flamethrowers. Hey, I wonder if in 100 years, you know how we hang Civil War guns on the wall and all that? I wonder if in 100 years somebody's going to have a BAR hanging on his wall. Or a flamethrower. So, you know, Look at that. Look at that lovely, solid, cast iron nozzle. Beautiful. It's a real 20th century artifact. You should know the history of this. This did away with over 9 million guys. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Is there one, just one magnificent human being out there who rises like a colossus? No, let's be honest. We are all colossi. Oh, isn't this magnificent? Baby, that can't all be jelly. Shaken like that. That ain't jello, son. It certainly isn't. I wish I could shimmy like my sister Kate. She knows whereof and what for, which is even more important. Tattoo. Sprung a leak. The thing to do is to keep your eye on the bouncing ball. Just follow the lyrics, that's all. It's like this famous thing that happened. 500 years from now, when peace descends upon the world, and there's this giant peace symphony written. And it takes 40 years to play it. And it takes everybody in the world, everybody who's trained from infanthood, to play an instrument, to be part of this vast, vast, overwhelming, completely overwhelming symphony of peace. Everybody's sitting there in front of their TV sets. There are regional directors, sub-regional directors, and local directors, with occasional cut-ins for commercials. And they're watching the conductor. And the peace symphony goes on for 10, 15 years. Everybody plays his part. There's these two guys, the father and the son, sitting in South Bend, Indiana, triangle players. The father has waited 37 years, and his part hasn't come up yet. He's been counting rests all those years. He's now on his dying day. It's his son, carry on. We're on the 3,437,298th bar. Oh, there goes 299th bar. With that, he expires. And his son picks up the triangle and begins to count. 2 years go by. 3 years go by. He's nearing his big moment. It's only 2 pages away now. 38 years have passed, man and boy. And there's the great conductor, God himself, peering out of the television set. He's counting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, here it comes, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the baton points at him, and he can't find his triangle. He's been counting, he can't find his triangle, and it's gone! With that, the great baton waves back and forth and says, somebody goofed! The whole world sits there, stunned. Somebody goofed. God says, take it back from the beginning.